Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to the Not a Noun podcast. It is episode 210. Myself and Andrea Cleary are here as ever. Andrea, how are you?
I'm good, Niall. How are you?
Good. Good. You're looking well. Your camera's looking well. Your background is looking good. I've got loads of records. You've got loads of books. It's who we are.
Mac Yates there and there. Who I saw, I didn't see him, whose paintings I saw in the gallery at the weekend, which is very
which
nice.
Gallery
the National Gallery. The National Gallery.
The National
of Ireland. Which was lovely. Had a very nice time. And we were kind of rushing out because we had like a dinner appointment. What do you call it? A reservation.
well, I have a dinner appointment after this. So
appointment.
We'll keep it to a tight hour, I'd say.
Yes. But yeah, it was rushing out. And then Harry was like, oh, just pop in here into this room for a second. And we popped in and he was like, there's that Picasso. And I was like, oh yeah. So it's a good gallery, you know, maybe I'll start doing free promo for the gallery in the vein of my previous work with the library.
With the library, yeah.
So yeah.
It gives good gallery, I swear. That place gives
great
good gallery. Very good. Very nice.
Gives good gallery.
Well,
right, what are we talking about now?
We're going to talk about, we're sandwiched in between two big live stream music events, weekend one and weekend two of Coachella. Especially the last couple of years, it's been really obvious that Coachella has become the equivalent of Glastonbury in terms of its live streams, probably more so because it's an international festival. It's streamed on YouTube. All six stages of the festival were live streamed. Now, obviously, not all of it was live streamed, but it is basically Coachella is the first big festival of the year that happens internationally. So for a lot of us, it's the first opportunity to get to see a lot of the acts that might be coming to our shores or get a glimpse of what it might look like or what the sets might look like from artists who are coming, we're interested in. In other cases, it's actually the first time we really get to see anyone. People like Frank Ocean playing their first gig in 6 years. 6 years.
6 years. Yeah.
And then the likes of Jai Paul playing his first ever gig. So two sides of the same coin in a way. Both very enigmatic artists who came out around the same time, who use mystery and intrigue and drip feeding information as part of their whole thing. Certainly are not ones to be doing a lot of public appearances. Certainly, Jai Paul, like, literally was the first thing he's ever done on a live stage at Coachella. So we talk about that, and I want to talk more specifically about Jai Paul and the journey he's been on, because it's something I'm just really interested in, and I thought it'd be fun to do, because, I mean, I love the music of Jai Paul. I know you do as well. We were talking about the... we were both trying to get the record last week, so we'll get into all that, but...
I'm in the lottery for his London gigs.
Same. Well. I'm actually going over for The Great Escape, which is that weekend. And so I'm going over on the Wednesday, as it happened. I accidentally booked my flight on the day, Wednesday, the May 10th, instead of the Thursday. I should have probably done it the Thursday. So I do have a whole day on the 10th. So, you know, ticket gods, Dice FM, raffle people, I'm around. I'm around. I'm sure no one else is in London, so it's fine. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. But I think let's start with, I mean, first of all, Coachella, did you watch much of it?
I watched a bit of it. I sort of just watched the performers that I was looking forward to. I saw a bit of Blackpink, which I thought was really good. I saw a bit of Rosalía, who I also thought was good, who I think probably should have headlined. But
oh yeah, she was fantastic. Jesus.
Yeah, it feels like she's at the right stage now to start headlining festivals like this. I saw Boy Genius and then Jaipal and Frank, I guess, a little bit. I mean, we'll talk about Frank in a minute, but like,
I mean, no one really saw Frank, but because it wasn't officially live streamed.
It's not a festival that I would have sat down and watched. I've never really been that interested in Coachella, I'll be honest with you. It's like with Glastonbury, it's closer to home. I'm probably a bit more familiar with the artists, and I think that the BBC coverage of it is excellent. But this year with Coachella, I was like, oh yeah, I'll have a look. And I was pleasantly surprised at the quality of the live streams that they had up. I thought they were well produced. You could see everything you wanted to see. There was like shots of the crowd. I had much more of a sense of what Coachella actually looks like. Because like, I think Coachella is really, it's a deeply interesting festival to me because of its kind of dual legacy as a music festival and like an influencer space, I suppose. Yeah. Like it came to prominence in the 2010s, which was like the Instagram era, and you had Vanessa Hudgens of all people still to this day being called like the queen of Coachella because of her like iconic fashion looks. She's kind of like the, like what Alexa Chung is to Glastonbury, Vanessa Hudgens was to Coachella, and like Coachella fashion being a thing. So it was always this sort of like this place where celebrities and early influencers go to be photographed. But unlike Glastonbury, they're sort of not mixing in with like filth like us. Like
Well, that's the American thing, right?
VIP spaces. Yeah. They have their VIP spaces. And I think this year, or now coming into this new decade where social media has changed a lot, things are a lot more, I don't like the term relatable, but there's a lot more like normal people with normal tickets to go to Coachella are making content about their experience at Coachella, and it's easier to get a sense of what it actually looks and feels like for like a normal person. So I think this year's Coachella was very, very interesting because it was the first, you know, TikTok Coachella where like people who weren't there could watch it through TikTok or through Instagram Live or whatever it is, as we'll come to. But yeah, so I just wanted to kind of note that about the festival and about it being like just a very funny one, that like we don't, like when Glastonbury happened last year, you could definitely say that was the first TikTok Glastonbury, but it wasn't. There wasn't that the same kind of like content. There wasn't the same like obsession with being seen to be there. And so
the Americans
think that's
do
my,
that differently.
My problem with it. They do. And obviously it's in California. It's down the road from fucking Hollywood and LA, and it's in the desert in the middle of nowhere. You can rent houses that are nearby, go and be photographed at Coachella and then leave, which reportedly a lot of influencers did this year. So it has, I think it still has this kind of like personality clash of like, we're the festival who got Frank Ocean, and we also booked Jaipal on like a pretty big stage. So yeah, we're cool, but also like, please come to our festival and be photographed in your like outfits that are worth thousands of dollars and post it to your Instagrams and there's this weird kind of personality clash there with Coachella that I always find weird. But crucially, why I bring this up is that Frank Ocean, among other things that I'll go into in a minute, but Frank Ocean decided something like an hour before his set was due to begin on Sunday night that he didn't want the set live streamed. I think that that is, it's a very naive decision on Frank's part, because of course it was live streamed by various people on Instagram Live, whose Instagrams were shared on Reddit and on Twitter and wherever around the place, so that literally thousands, hundreds of thousands of people could watch it on the live stream with very, very little control on his part. Like, Pitchfork interviewed a girl who live streamed it. Her Instagram name is at Morgan Doesn't Care. She's also a musician. And she spoke to Pitchfork about how over 130,000 people, including Lord, were in the live stream on her Instagram after it was shared on Reddit. And she was relatively lucky because, well, lucky, but I mean, she put the work in. She got up to the barricade at Frank's, at the stage, 11 hours before he came on stage, which to her would have been 10 hours early because he was an hour late. But, you know, she was there. She was there for Frank. He was the main reason why she was coming to this festival, and she live streamed it, and we can all look at it for what it was, I suppose, which maybe we'll talk about now.
Yeah, well, I'd like to just say that I would hate to be at Coachella myself. I would think I would hate it.
Oh, fuck that.
It's too hot. It's in a desert. Man. Imagine being in a tent in a desert. My God. There was a video last year on our Discord, actually, that somebody shared that I watched. It was these British lads at Coachella. It's worth to watch because just to get the experience of, because we know what our festivals are like. We're very versed in them now. We you know, we have small comforts, but the American thing is just totally different.
Yeah.
It's not like the Woodstock 99 thing where people were like camp beside loos. You bring loads of gear, or you like you said, you rent an Airbnb and you a great expense. Tickets for Coachella start at like $550, so they're double what they are here. And it's in the desert. And if you want to go drinking as part of the festival, there's these pens, these areas you go to drink.
Yeah.
It's just not the same as what we have here. It seems like there's a lot of long waits, a lot of queues, a lot of waiting around, a lot of lines, all that stuff. So it's just a different thing completely for me.
I even noticed like the stage setups I found kind of not weird, but like uninventive, like just sort of, it's just the stage and the crowd. And
I think they can be sure it's never going to rain. That's one thing that we can never have.
Yeah, that's something.
So
but I mean,
open staging, very different.
But just like these massive, the kind of prioritizing people being able to see screens over people being able to see the show, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. But it is, it does make for a festival that makes like really good sense in terms of live streams. But there, like you said, Frank deciding to give control to the people that were there as opposed to take control himself and how he's presented. Yeah. Did he really want to be there is my first question to you.
No.
He didn't seem to be.
So Frank was booked for Coachella 2020, which obviously didn't happen. And then he didn't play last year because he wasn't ready, following the tragic death of his brother in a car accident. It was completely understandable. He pulled out of that, but it was confirmed that he was going to play 2023. I mean, no, he didn't want to be there. Definitely not. It seemed as though there was this grand sort of concept. There's the infamous, I think the now infamous, even 3 days later, ice rink that was planned. There was 100 or so ice skaters who I'd heard actually were like a mixture of ice skaters and professional hockey players or semi-professional hockey players who were like due to skate on this rink. That was an hour before was being thawed because he didn't want it anymore. And that image is just so funny to me. Just the middle of the desert, all these people trying to thaw this ice rink. Like,
first of all, not very cool in terms of climate. Like, ice rink in the desert, like energy, Jesus. And then deciding not to use it after all that.
And the amount of electricity in, well, like,
all used there. God. But it just does sound like, how can I get out of this? I'm doing a festival in the desert. I'll ask them to set up an ice rink because they won't be able to do that. And then they turn around and like, yeah, we have it.
Do you remember in the episode of Succession where it's Kendall's birthday? He's planning to do this like thing where he comes out on the stage as Jesus or something, and he's going to be sacrificed as Jesus. And then right before it's due to happen, he decides, no, it's stupid. I don't want to do it anymore. And then everybody else has to like figure out how to like not do it.
I
couldn't stop thinking about that. Just imagining Frank being like, no, I don't care. Just melt it. I want it out of my sight. And it's like the absolute stress that everyone must have been going through, from the dancers to the like the actual Coachella people to like whoever's managing him. It just must have been. And then obviously also deciding like, no, I'm gonna presumably like breach my contract with the festival and not live stream the festival, because like when you think about it, that Coachella is being streamed on YouTube. So there's obviously like a commercial partnership between Coachella and YouTube. If your biggest act, your biggest draw, somebody who has famously, you know, not performed in 6 years, famously mysterious, is, you know, like think of the millions of people that would have been watching YouTube at that time on Sunday night who weren't, who were sent to Instagram instead. You know, you would be sent to your rival Meta. Like you would be absolutely furious. And if like I would completely understand them just like pulling any connection with him for this weekend. I will eat my hat if he performs on Sunday. Like I really will. And I don't know which side of the aisle it'll come from, whether he'll pull out or they'll say, you're not doing that again. But I would be absolutely shocked if he performs again on Sunday. But anyway, back to the story of what happened. Yeah,
I'm interested because like, okay, tell me. Yeah, continue. Because like, I think that we're all trying to figure out is like, is this going to happen? And is,
right.
Is what is the narrative now? What's happening? Is the narrative shifting? Damage control.
Like a large body of water in the middle of the desert. It's shifting.
It's dissipating. So, it's melting. It's all falling apart.
It's a disaster. So there was a statement made from at the Festive Owl on Twitter, which people might have seen going around. I'll just read a little bit of it. This person says, the stage production was supposed to and did contain an ice rink that was constructed and ready to go. Frank decided at the last minute that he no longer wanted it at all. Of all of the people walking around him at the start of the performance were actually ice skaters, have been practicing for weeks and were supposed to be skating as part of the production. Coachella had to deconstruct the approved stage that had been planned and sign off months in advance, melt the entire ice rink, and then set it up how Frank decided today with no warning, which is what you ended up seeing and caused the hour-long delay. Like, I mean, even doing that in an hour is something, but this all happened when doors had already opened for Sunday and people were securing their spots to see him. If the last minute changes weren't made, he wouldn't have performed at all, leaving the festival without a closing headliner. Frank also personally pulled the plug at the last second on the live stream, which left a very sour taste in many inside Coachella's mouths. Ultimately, it sounded like, quote,
no, just to ask about the curfew. Sorry, you had a quote.
No, go ahead.
It said that the curfew was 12 midnight on Sunday.
It's midnight on Sundays, yeah.
But he stopped at half 12, so they'd gone past curfew already, had they? That's what I read it.
I think he stopped a few minutes past 12. I don't know if it was...
It said it was 25 past 12 when he stopped. So
okay.
They'd obviously let him go on quite significantly because he was an hour late.
So with the curfew, it's interesting. It's not that they let him go on. It's that you can go over curfew, but for every minute over curfew that you go, you incur a fine.
Yeah, that's usually in the contract at festivals and stuff. And that's why everyone's always looking at the clock. There's a clock side of the stage. So you're like, you know, you can't get past that time.
Yeah. And the fine is a lot. It's a couple of grand, like for every minute. So, you know, you don't want to be going too much over it. The curfew is really interesting because he would have known about that curfew. And he started an hour late and had a 10-minute DJ set in the middle of it.
That's the thing, because we didn't see the live stream. It's really hard. You're just picking up bits and pieces here. It's hard to know exactly what happened. You know, You were like, did he sit down there on a stool for most of the set?
From someone's phone.
Oh, is there? Okay.
There's a few floating around. So I've seen the set.
Okay, you have.
From the point of view of somebody's phone. Oh, sorry. Right. So just before we get into the actual set, the latest in this saga is that Frank didn't want to do the ice rink thing because he allegedly, what was first claimed, was hurt his ankle during rehearsals. And you're like, okay, he hurt his ankle during rehearsals. Then it was revealed that actually he hurt his ankle while he was like biking around the grounds like earlier this week or like earlier in the week during rehearsal time, but very much not during rehearsals. That would mean that he would have known from then that he can't do his ice rink thing. If it did turn out that Frank Ocean was going to skate out in the middle of Coachella, in the middle of the desert on some ice skates and do a flip, like, you know, that, like, then you had time to fix this. Like, what? I'm so, like, to be a fly on the wall. Like, I hope somebody.
Oh, I hope they're making a documentary. I hope there was a documentary.
Like,
that'd be great.
Because, like, even if it was just people on their phones in the background, like this stuff like this needs to be documented. Like, obviously, I'm going to bring up Beyonce in Beachella in 2018. But like, she had the good sense to document that. I just hope that other people had the good sense backstage, behind the scenes, to be documenting Frank's return. So, I mean, I think his ankle's probably fine. I don't know if you.
It does look like he sat on the stool for most of it, right? I mean, I did see some footage of him.
Yeah, but he's also like bopping. Like during, there was a couple of songs where he didn't sing at all and just like.
Yeah, I think it just doesn't reflect well on him because you're like, like you said, you're coming up against, you're headlining against the likes of Beyonce, who's obviously done an amazing job and put months and months of work. And he just pops on and starts like letting the backing track work for him and vibing essentially to some of those songs. And while what the bits I've heard, he does sound really good, but a lot of fans feel disrespected. Yeah. Isn't that the case? Like, so he has a lot to do if he's going to make it up. And I can't see him doing it. That's the thing you were saying about the ice rink. So they were going to do that next weekend as well. So that's obviously not going to happen then. They can't do it now because they cancelled the first one. At least all the dancers got their custom Prada or whatever it was that they apparently got.
I'd say those fucking ice skaters are unionizing as we speak to make sure they get paid.
Yeah.
It's funny, with like what you said about the fans feeling disappointed, It seems from reports from people who were there on Reddit, on TikTok, on, you know, I've been kind of, you know, scurrying around all the little Frank Ocean corners of the internet to try and get a read of like what was the vibe there. And it seems like it's very much like two different camps. There's the fans who were just so grateful to see Frank Ocean, that it wouldn't have mattered if he just come out and monologued for 20 minutes or if he just come out and given a wave or whatever. And those fans also have a lot of sympathy, or when they're posting about it, they talk about having a lot of sympathy for him, obviously because of the death of his brother. Frank made a small statement while on stage about how he used to go to Coachella with his brother and he's thinking of him, and that this is a very special and important performance because him and his brother used to come to Coachella. But he also said, like, I always hated Coachella because it's too dusty out here, and I admired that. So yeah, so there's those set of fans who are basically like, you should count yourself lucky that he even showed up, sort of thing, which I guess is part of being a Frank Ocean fan, is understanding that like he hates you, like he doesn't like he doesn't care about us.
I don't mind that. He should cover that song.
Yeah, but it's like a meme with Frank Ocean. Like, being a Frank Ocean fan, it's just like, you're just like, oh man, he hates me so much. Like, he's gonna make me think there's a new album, but actually he's just building a ladder on Instagram Live or whatever the fuck that was during, like, it's just like, yeah, he hates us and we understand it. But
well, he did give us two albums that week, and that was because he didn't want to be on his, in his label anymore.
I know. he's a difficult person to be a fan of, not because he's problematic, but just because he's so useless at having fans and knowing what fans want. And like,
I feel like he doesn't have management around him the way he acts. I'm just like, this guy just needs somebody to take control of his business affairs.
Yeah.
And so he can focus on the music and just be like, stop doing this stuff where you're like pulling things on labels and your fans and everyone else.
Yeah. I think he needs like a completely ruthless corporate executive to just take hold just for a year or two and just give us like, I don't know, two singles on an album, just a little.
Yeah.
But you know, there's plenty of fans who don't want that kind of thing from him. So that's the one side in terms of the reactions to it. And then the other side where, like you were saying, very much disappointed would be like an understatement. Like there's a lot of anger actually about it because he was the Sunday night headliner and because he is Frank Ocean. Like, so there's this kind of idea about Coachella that everyone that attends Coachella, because of its price point, are middle class or privileged or Instagram or there for Instagram or whatever it might be. But it's completely conceivable that people saved up their money so that they could see Frank Ocean live. Like that's not beyond the realms of possibility. And I saw reports to that tune from many, many people online saying like, I've never been to Coachella before. It never had any like interest for me, but you know, I saved hard and I'm gonna get to see Frank Ocean perform. And also they wanted to see Jai Paul as well, which is fair enough. So from those people's perspective, like I have a lot of sympathy for those people because the performance, I don't know, I mean, I don't know what I would have expected if I was there, but it definitely wasn't what they got. There were a few times when he did sing live, he sounded great. But I think the most jarring bits of it for me was like, it's not that he like remixed some of his songs and didn't play very many of them, you know, straight live. It wasn't even the pressing play on Spotify on two of his tunes and just like vibing to a camera without even holding a microphone. It was the like long silences between the tracks, one of which I think went on for like 10 minutes, in which obviously something conceptual or visual was supposed to have been happening in whatever the previous iteration of the show was and just now wasn't. But there wasn't enough time to fill that space with anything. So you get like just dancers standing around not knowing what to do. You get Frank like going backstage for a little bit, doing a couple of songs backstage, coming back out. You get the band kind of standing around looking at each other.
All speaks to even a lack of rehearsal in the first place to be able to, you know, not turn things around or like remove parts of the show and then still keep it tight. And like, it's just,
But I mean, if you removed all those weird silences, he probably wouldn't have gone over curfew, which is a bit ironic, but it is, I mean, I feel sorry for everybody. I feel sorry for Frank. I feel sorry for everybody that was performing with him. I feel sorry for everyone who had to deal with this because the whole thing's a fucking shit show. But like, it was just in those, like, so when you watch the beginning of it, he's backstage and the music's starting up and people in the crowd, like I watched it from the perspective of someone who was like a little bit back in the crowd and it's like, electric. People are going fucking crazy. They can't believe it. And the music's coming in and you kind of feel like, okay, this is, you know, he's going to appear in that way that shows start, you know, kind of traditionally. Yeah. And then he doesn't. And like, I might be reading into this, but like, I got the vibe from the crowd that it's like, oh, well, maybe he's subverting things a bit. And, you know, oh, now he's singing and he's backstage. This is like a deconstruction of the live performance. And then after a bit, you just kind of feel that energy like just dip. And then it goes back up a couple of times with like the big tracks or when he does come out and actually sing. But it's like you get these like one or two moments of just magic because he's Frank Ocean. He's incredibly talented and like, and is an amazing, you know, live vocal performer, as well as everything else. But then you get these bits where you're like, okay, now it's happening. Now he's given us the show. And then he doesn't. And then at the very end of all of it, he just says, from backstage, they're telling me that it's curfew. I gotta go. Thanks. And like, and that's it. And people stayed when the lights came up. People were hanging around there for like an hour afterwards, just fully convinced, like, no, that this can't be it. This can't be it. But it was it.
Wow.
It's just that's, so sad for everybody involved.
I don't feel sad for him, really, to be honest, because he had time to. Yeah. He just doesn't want to, he shouldn't do live shows. He's done them before and they were a bit stayed, a bit static. So maybe he just shouldn't do them in the first place.
I think it's completely fine to not want to perform live. I think it's completely fine to not want to put out albums. I think it's fine to not want to put out singles and kind of do your conceptual stuff, be an artist instead of a musician, whatever. But like, why, what on God's green earth possessed him to say yes to this and to not, and even if he had said yes in some kind of, you know, state where he was like, okay, yeah, I can definitely manage this, you know, and like, and I'm very, very sympathetic to him. He's dealing with grief. I understand that, but pull out if you don't think you can do it. Like, it's like, give people time to make the decision on this. Don't just show up and pretend that this was the plan all along. It just felt like a lot of fans said the word that was going around a lot was that they felt disrespected.
And that's fair.
I feel like rarely do I think that like musicians owe anybody anything, but if they've paid money to see you, a show is the least that you could give them, you know.
That's true.
Yeah,
I much watched.
Have you ever seen a really awful set at a festival? Now,
are you enjoying it so far? the Amanda Brunker thing. No, I haven't really seen.
Oh yeah,
I'm trying to think. Have I seen a really terrible set at a festival? I can't recall anything that was so bad or that didn't really happen, or they're rare occurrences, thankfully.
Yeah,
and I'm glad I wasn't there. Haha, yes, interrupting this podcast, share with you, as you are already probably aware if you're listening to this podcast, Frank Ocean has indeed pulled out of Coachella about 6 hours after we recorded this. He pulled out, cancelled weekend two at Coachella. No real major surprise, but really didn't reflect well on what happened at weekend one. He was reportedly advised by doctors not to perform after suffering two fractures and a sprain in his left leg. He said, "It was chaotic. There is some beauty in chaos. It isn't what I intended to show, but I did enjoy being out there and I'll see you soon." So, yeah, people may disagree with that, but also that's what happened. So, yes, Frank Ocean did cancel. And just to say that in terms of the fines, Coachella was fined $177,000 for the delays over the weekend, last weekend. Anyway, that's enough from future Niall, present Niall. Back to past Niall. Bye.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
But another man that was there and was there for the first time, as we mentioned, was Jai Paul. And it seemed to go well enough for him, considering it was his first ever gig.
Yeah.
And so
I wasn't as blown away by his performance as a lot of other people were.
Are people blown
but
away?
I think
it was just nice to see him more than anything else. It's nothing
too special, I don't think, really.
That's how I felt. But I saw a lot of people being like, this is amazing. And like,
It's just cool that he's doing it. I think that's the thing. Because what I would like to do now is just take you through a brief history of the man, Jaipal, and how he got from... Because he's due to play again this weekend. And if anyone hasn't seen it, originally I came home, I had Luma on Saturday night, really good night. A lot of the Discord crew were there, which is nice to see them. And that was great. And came home, was like, great, Jaipal's on literally like when I get home after the club, that'd be brilliant. And I got home and he wasn't on because they decided not to show it live. And it was rebroadcast later that evening or that night. So early morning for us. So I did watch some of it the next day. It was Monday actually before I got to do see any of it. So saw some clips before that, but really good to see. I just think it's nice that he did it and that it existed. And he had a full band with him.
He looked nervous at first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He looked nervous at first, but I think he settled into it. But let's talk about Jaipal because I think it's time we give him a bit of the pod for ourselves. I mean, let's start with the opening bit of his first ever song, BTSU. So, Jaipal, right? That song came out in 2010, 13 years ago, the BTSU demo. BTSTU demo came out 13 years ago on MySpace originally. It was that time.
Or Bitsu, as I've been calling it for decades.
Bitsu, yeah. Actually, does it mean anything? It's one of those things
I don't know.
That's what it's called.
And it's definitely not called Bitsu by anybody other than me. It's just what I've always called it.
Apparently the track means back to save the universe. There we go. So that's a BTSTU. I remember I wrote about this in 2010 originally when it first came out, and I said Jaipal is a producer from London who's just starting out. So far he's been making electronic R&B with dub frequencies. Sounds like pop music, just really weird pop music that plays in your brain forever and ever. And to be honest, that's fairly accurate because it still plays in my brain forever and ever because I've never got sick of these songs ever.
That's the most perfect description of that you could give to Jaipal after he brings out his first song. Like, that's perfect. This is why you're the best.
Thank you.
This is why we trust you.
Yeah, I trust myself sometimes too. But no, BTSTU, what is it about that song? It is the crunchy beats, the kind of rumbling low end, the evocative airy vocals, the effects that punctuate the production that make it sound like it's in Star Wars and in space. The real snap of percussion that comes halfway through, the kind of earworm hooks, the ad-libs that like work really well. All of it. It just wasn't like, I mean, we've had around that time, there was loads of acts that were coming out that were doing the mystery thing, doing the enigmatic thing, releasing things online, but none of the songs stood up to this. And this was the one that this and Jasmine, which came afterward a year later, it was, or maybe it was 2 years later. They were both just so unique and different and occupied their own palette but they also referenced like the likes of Prince and J Dilla and D'Angelo in terms of like the R&B kind of style. But it's just so different and so its own thing, very individual. But the thing about Jaipal is he didn't talk. He didn't do anything. He didn't have a plan. The song came out. Then it happened. Then XL Recordings got in touch with him, I think. They released the track eventually. So it became BTSTU. And then the demo was on it, and then it became just a full version that was on streaming, all that kind of stuff. And then we had Jasmine, second single. Here's a little bit of Caribou, Dan's Nate talking about Jaipal, Jasmine.
The next track is I'm not entirely sure if it's Jaipal or Jaipal, how you pronounce his name, but the track's called Jasmine. And I think, like a lot of people in the last few years, I was totally transfixed by this track. It's just such a distinctive sound. Yes, the first thing that you notice is just like the kind of mad sounds that come out of nowhere as you're listening to the track. Something will like slice through the mix. I want to aspire to make music that's exciting and has unexpected things happen, but like that is truly unexpected and amazing. It lives in its own world. Like, he's one of those great artists that appears like totally fully formed, sounding just like himself and nobody else, which is fantastic.
So that's Jaipal, and that's Dance Nate from Caribou talking about Jasmine. Again, I think it encapsulates a lot of how a lot of big artists think about Jaipal, because he did do that for a lot of people. He distinctly made his own world with just two songs, became one of the like most buzziest artists in the world. So many people were anticipating what would come next. And what came next was actually quite unexpected, because it was not
sadness,
planned, apparently.
Nothing but sadness and despair for poor Jaipal came next.
Certainly, yeah.
I get really upset thinking about this.
Sunday, April 14th, 2013, a year after Jasmine comes out, an album appeared on Bandcamp. It was a Sunday. An album appeared on Bandcamp called Leak 0413. In brackets, Bait Ones. So I wrote about it the next day. What had happened was what seemed to have happened. It was a lot of confusion at the time. I remember people, bloggers and people I knew were like, there's a Jaipal album up on Bandcamp. What's going on? And I was like, it can't be. And at first it just looked like it was some sort of publicity stunt or something that XL had done in order to like, just to, because he wasn't a regular artist, and they were like, well, can we do something different? Then there was a question whether it was an artist disagreement with the label and he decided to go it alone. Did he post it like as a fuck you to them? Did XL refuse to release it because they thought it wasn't good? Like, was it even finished? Was it even the album? It doesn't seem to be. There's a lot of demos afterwards, unfinished, written on the track listing. But it turns out
it wasn't mastered at all.
No, it had samples from the Harry Potter movie in it. It had samples from the OC. Gossip Girl, yeah. And a cover of Jennifer Page's Crush, which ultimately does fit in on it. But apparently one of the hashtags was a non-CDR that suggests anything but an official release. And this is a guy who was very careful with just releasing two single songs before this album or purported album arrived, and we then got all of a sudden got 16 tracks out of nowhere, and you're like, no, this can't be right. And it wasn't, and it turns out the album was stolen because Jaipal's laptop was stolen, and there was a statement afterwards that people were being refunded for the album that they bought, because they'd obviously got in touch with Bandcamp. This was somebody had realized what they had in their possession. But it definitely sounded incomplete and unmastered.
Yeah, the person who stole it had set up a PayPal where if you bought it on Bandcamp, it would go to their PayPal, which is just, it's so horrible to think about.
So somebody's making money off this.
Yeah.
There was XL put out a statement saying, as widely reported, music by XL Recordings artist Jaipal was illegally made available via a fake Bandcamp account.
This music was not uploaded by Jai and it is not his debut album. It is a collection of various unfinished recordings from Jai's past. Neither XL or Jai have taken any money from the sale of this music. We've been working with Bandcamp and PayPal to resolve the situation. And it told us all purchases will be funded within 7 days. What happened after was a clarification, and that clarification took a long time really to come. He did start a Twitter account just shortly afterwards to say, "That's not my album. I didn't put that up there. Please don't download it," kind of thing. But yeah, it was really 2019, 6 years later, before we really got the full true story of what actually happened, because he released two songs in June 2019, Do You Love Her Now? And He. And very welcome to hear them again. But along with that, that album was actually added to streaming that day, which at first didn't, when I saw it, I was like, well, this feels like you're being duped a little bit. Like an unfinished album is all of a sudden on streaming. But Jai Paul did do an interview where he clarified his intent with it. He essentially said that, you know, I mean, people understood that as the album at the time by that time. And so he felt like he wanted to honor that and just like get past it. He'd done a lot of work. He went through a lot of things. His statement says, "I understand that it might have seemed like a positive thing to a lot of people. The music they've been waiting to hear was finally out there. But for me, it was very difficult to deal with. I felt pretty alone with everything. Like no one else seemed to view the situation the same way as I did, as a catastrophe. On a personal level, things gradually went south and I had a breakdown of sorts. I was in quite a bad place for some time. I was unable to work and withdrew from life in general." So it took him a long time to work through those issues and to kind of see it as more of a positive thing, which seems to be also what had happened.
Crucially, when the album first leaked, it was treated by a lot of people in the industry as an album, even though they understood that this was an illegal leak. Pitchfork had it as like, it was on loads of end of year lists as like some of the best music of the year, which you could definitely look at positively and say like, look, these are the scraps, like the unmastered scraps of a project that he's working on, and it's still among the best music that's been released this year. But I reckon for him, like all of that must have all just felt so strange, and I'm sure he had no idea what was actually true, what people actually felt about it, and like to not actually have the opportunity to release an album in the way that you want to. It must be a weird experience to have the album that you didn't want released, an unfinished project, be released and be treated as though it was your debut album and to be liked for it. And you're thinking then like, do they like me for something that I'm not? What is it about this that they're enjoying? Because this isn't my music yet, you know, it's just the scraps of it. So that must have been a really strange, like, crisis of identity in terms of what his sound is and who he is as an artist. I could absolutely understand somebody like just retreating for as long as he did after that. And I love that he decided to put it up on streaming eventually, because from the other side of things, like you had these Jai Paul super fans who had so far had like two tracks and then being given 12 tracks, like you know, you can't blame them for downloading it and for listening to it. Like we all listened to it. We all enjoyed it, but like it's nice that he sort of is allowing them to listen to it without feeling guilty about it, I suppose, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he goes on to say in that statement that, it initially happened at 3 a.m. on a Saturday night. And it seems like the person who did this planned it that way. They immediately contacted the police. His management called him because it was that time. No, we weren't able to do anything quickly to get it down. He said, "It probably came from a burnt CD that got misplaced. A fair amount of people would have had access to my music in various forms between 2010 and 2013. So you could imagine there's some like disgruntled former music industry employee who had this and was like, I'm gonna try and make some money out of this. It's something as simple as that and as heinous as that who actually went and, you know, potentially ruined this man's career. Who had it
there
had to
are
do
people
a lot.
Out there who know who it was.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
There's a few people out there who know who it was. Because it's doing that isn't a fuck you to a label. It's not a fuck you to your former employee if it was a, you know, it's like what the lowest hanging fruit you can possibly get, like a fucking new artist whose album hasn't even been put out yet, who's getting a lot of like good press or whatever, but like a young guy. Like, it's just, it's so mean and cruel. And then obviously making money off it is just like really scummy behavior as well. But like,
yeah,
it's, yeah, people know who it is. And I find that
absolutely
troubling.
So a police investigation happened that summer and it led to two suspects who were eventually arrested. Their property raided and computers seized. Nothing was found, but this time it was almost a year after the leak had taken place. The BPI kindly offered to step in and help towards the investigation. So I'd like to thank them for the concern, he says. All the money was obviously refunded. That's grand. He says, recently, and this was in 2019, recently I've been having therapy of various kinds and this has helped me get to a place where I can begin to think about returning to music. I'm thankful for that. It has allowed me to understand some of what happened in 2013 a little better. Not through anybody else's lens, but through my own. And through this, I've been able to acknowledge some of the trauma and grief. I've grown to appreciate that people have enjoyed that music and lived with it. And I accept that there's no way to put that shit back in a box. There was no way to fix what happened and continue down our original path. Looking back, it's sad to think about what could have been, but it is what it is and I had to let it go. We decided now to make the April 13th leaked music readily available so those who want to hear it can access via platforms they're used to. In order to do that, we had to remove a bunch of samples that we're unable to clear. So what you hear won't be exactly what leaked in 2013, but I know the original stuff is still floating about if you know where to look. Of course, it's completely surreal to me that this music will now exist officially in this form, unfinished and even sequenced by the people who leaked it. Much of that tracking production work was there, but it's a shame about the scratch vocals and the overall mix. This is also not all of the material from those early sessions, so again, it's a shame not to be able to present something completed in its entirety. It will always be painful for me to listen to myself, and I don't want to deny people the chance to hear it, especially as it's already knocking about. So yeah, he has really been through a lot and the rug was pulled from under him. He said, I was so frustrated by how this was all being framed online, leading to the widespread belief that I decided to leak my own music, despite my record label and I saying otherwise. It didn't fit with anything I'd done previously in style or attitude, and especially not in presentation. To make matters worse, I was advised at the time to keep quiet and leave things ambiguous, but this didn't really fit my vibe and there was a disagreement among us. I soon felt unable to gauge with it at all. So he's been through so much to get to that point where he's actually now, I'm sitting there and I'm going to play a song from Leak 0413 and I know that he's okay with this now, you know? So yeah, that song is essentially canon now, you know what I mean? Like it wasn't intended to be things like this 41 second baby beat thing wasn't even supposed to be. That's a Dilla-esque idea, which is now part of his lore, so he has no choice to that. But, you know, some good things did happen in the intervening years. Obviously, Joy Paul's brother, AK Paul, started releasing music. And in fairness to him, can we just have a moment for his song Land Cruisin' and how fucking cool that song is? Just a bit of that song. So yeah, in terms of wrestling back control, Jai Paul and his brother AK Paul did a lot. They set up the Paul Institute, which helped release artists like Ruth Venn and Fabiana Palladino. I know Fabiano Palladino was playing live with him at Coachella last week. So that was nice to see. But they released, basically, Paul.institute was the website. Suddenly these tracks would appear from these artists, Hira and Ruthven. Ruthven was a firefighter from Lewisham in London. Fabiana Palladino had worked with Jesse Ware, Sampa and Subtract before. But a lot of the stuff that they were releasing was very much in the vein of what they were doing. Both the two brothers, Jai and AK, their prints were all over it. Here's a bit of Shimmer from Fabiana Palladino. All very much in the vein of that kind of electronic pop stuff. And this one is a particular favorite of mine, the Ruthven song Evil. So, yeah, the Paul Institute. Do you remember the funny thing? The particular magazine that they released the news about. Do you remember that?
What was that? Vaguely. What was that?
It was called Property Week. I sent you a picture of it earlier on. So they had news broke that the Paul brothers had acquired an actual building to house their Paul Institute. And it was leaked by Property Week. And the picture, which I sent you earlier, is just the lads in the hard hats outside this building with high-vis jackets on and two older lads in particular who were just there. I don't know what's going on. But fair play to them. So that was kind of like, it was totally
fitting
with
it. They're the absolute image of each other.
They are, yeah, they are, absolutely. There's actually a video online from last year, which Fact put up, of Ruthven and AK Paul having an hour-long conversation, which I only found out about half an hour ago. Didn't see that before. So at the time, they said the building is set to host a growing collective of musicians, artists, and technologists. I think they are from a suburb of London. So Rayner's Lane is a place that is often associated with Jai Paul. It's in Harrow, so a little bit outside London's city itself. But I think that might be where it is. And it certainly looked, when it came to last week and the picture that Jai Paul put up. So how did he announce that he was playing Coachella? Well, no one knew what was happening until, and people did know, but like he was there, he was on the list, but he put up a note on his own Reddit, which obviously is run by fans, saying, I hope you like what we're doing. Here's a picture from the rehearsals. You're like, you know, you're just rooting for him. You're always just rooting for him. And this is
a nice
completely
guy. Like,
yeah, it's a complete opposite of Frank, you know. I mean, he shares what he wants, but he does it in his own way. And I think I really respect him for that. And in fairness, he's done a lot over the years, really. Like, Jai and AK especially have done so much. Jai's been performed with, he did some production on a Big Boy song in 2012, but before things went south. 1080p. Sounds like him, all right. There was a great song that AK Paul did with Neo, and some good stuff that was on that Neo. Now it seems to have disappeared a bit, but this is a great song. And then there was the likes of Miguel, which the brothers appear to have worked with.
Miguel and AK Paul did a James Vincent McMorrow remix. A former guest of this show has been remixed by AK Paul, so that's nice, isn't it? Here's a bit of that. And there apparently AK Paul did some co-production on a couple of surprising things. First of all, this song by Folds. So yeah, that was Folds. And surprisingly, there were others, like there's a Childish Gambino song with Ariana Grande that apparently has something involving Jaipal Muramasa as well. Mm. I think AK Paul did something with him.
And then there was the samples from people, Drake.
Yeah, Beyonce. So Beyonce and Drake have both sampled Jaipal's music. And then...
And the other fella. Don't play it.
Well, okay,
are you going to play it? Huh? Are you going to play Ed Sheeran?
I mean, just to show you how he takes it. Okay, do you want to hear it?
No.
No, of course you don't want to hear it. You don't have to listen to it.
But, go on. Like, right, the thing about Jasmine is that the vocals are purposefully sort of like you can't really, it's, you have to strain to kind of hear what the lyrics
are. Doesn't it just show you the difference between that, like the magic, the alchemy that's at play in Jaipal's voice, yeah, and the just how he kind of just ruins the vibe.
Ruins
just
everything, like takes any kind of mystery or intrigue.
It actually
out of that vocal performance.
Are you with me, Jasmine? The way he sounds like he's giving out to her. He's like, he's leering at her. I'm like,
it does.
God.
It's like Jaipal's over here, like, you know, carving like a beautiful little like crystal or something. And then Ed Sheeran just comes in with like the world's biggest hammer and just starts hammering away at it. And you're like, oh my God, just any sense of like musicality. It's just... Or like invention. Yeah. He's like, oh, I liked this. And, you know, congratulations, Ed Sheeran. You had good taste in one song. But like, for the love of God, you don't need to cover every song that you like. For fuck's sake.
No. Like, no. I mean, it was of the time. And it was a cover with some rapper as well. It was off some other project that he wouldn't be doing.
Yeah, he was
now.
Talking
Rocky
over
Fresh.
The opening fucking bars of Jasmine. Which,
yeah, exactly. So
I would,
but that was at the time that, like, that's so that time of like,
no,
okay, here's a hot track. Let's do a remix of or a mashup of it. You know,
where's Ed?
No, thanks. And also, like, finally, there was also a rumor that Jaipal had contributed to Lorde's Homemade Dynamite. Here he is. Here's a clip of that. Super well, but I think that you might be the same as me. Behave abnormally. Let's let things come out of the woodwork. I give you my best, I tell you all my best lies. Yeah, awesome, right? So let's let things come out of the woodwork. I give you my best, I tell you all my best lies. See me rolling, showing someone else love. Dancing with our shoes off. No, I think you're awesome, right? Our rules, our dreams, we're blind. Blowing shit up with homemade. There's no official credit on that sample, or if there's a sample in there. Apparently there is from one of his songs, but, and I think it is Crush, perhaps, if it is there. But there are some signs that maybe Lorde, she's definitely a fan.
I've just had a realization about Lorde. I think that Lorde has the kind of voice that should only sing choruses. I think whenever she's singing a verse, it sounds odd.
That's why, I think that's why Melodrama is good album. It's just like, just
full of verses.
Solid choruses.
like Green Light, I find her vocal performance in the verses on that borderline unlistenable.
Okay. Well, hard to have one without the other. You still need the contrast.
Her chorus is so great. Anyway, that's an aside.
Okay, well, apparently the song uses the same snare as Joypal's song BTSTU, bringing us all back to where we started here. And the song is in the same key as Straight Outta Mumbai, and apparently somebody had made an a cappella of the version of it. In 2015, Lore tweeted her annoyance of people who imitated Joypal's sound, saying, "Someone should start a Joypal imitation fund and donate every time an indie pop bro puts out a song that rips him. Hashtag justice. This inspiration thing, where the beat obviously rips samples unreleased Joypal tracks with no credit, will be very hypocritical of Lorde if she wasn't doing that." So if she didn't credit it. So anyway, it's tenuous enough, but it's tantalizing.
It's certainly like a hill for her to die on. Like
it is a hill. Sure. Yeah. There's no hills in Coachella as far as I'm aware.
No.
It's a valley. But the other thing that Joypal has done, and this is the last thing before the Coachella and the live shows, is that he had a cameo on Atlanta last year, if you remember. Remember the London episode of Atlanta? He actually appears in it.
You know what that is, yeah? That's ultimate white guilt.
I thought racism wasn't really a thing here like that. I thought it was more about class.
Racism and capitalism, hard to separate, isn't it?
So that brings us to where we're at now, which is Coachella and the album being released on vinyl. Myself and yourself, I think we've both got copies of it. 3,000 copies, they said, of the album.
A copy. I don't know how.
Somehow through the most idiosyncratic website in the world.
Show, Craig Fitzpatrick's sister has gotten me a copy of the album. So So I've promised if I do win a London ticket to see the show, I'll sort someone out with something.
Okay, very good.
They can
very
come good. With me and I
think outside. Look, the thing is, you know, like, both, have you been bitten by the Joypal Jasmine shipping issue? I certainly have. How long did it take, like 18 months or something, 16 months or something, for that
it took something like that
record to be delivered, which was like a Jasmine scented vinyl, which you have a copy of, which you still yet to receive.
It's still in an ex-colleague's house. So yeah, Niall, that. Not you. My ex-colleague's name is Niall. Niall, just get in touch. I'll DM you. I'll text you my address. Post it to me. I want it. Yeah, so I still haven't got my hands on it. So I don't personally know that it doesn't smell like jasmine. I'm still holding that hope.
I was trying to look for it there behind me before later. The show, or just to see if I could check, but I'll have to go through all of these records you can see behind me to figure out. As well, I have a lot of the Paul Institute vinyls as well, so it'd be nice to have, now that I have Joypal's blessing for sure, it'd be nice to have the album on record as well. Mm. And that leads us to the other thing that was announced after Coachella. Joypal is doing 4 shows, like you said there. 2 in London in May and 2 in New York, 1 at Brooklyn Steel, 1 at Knockdown Center in Queens. So yeah, all the tickets are exclusively available via a ballot. Anyone can sign up to it, I believe, as long as you do it by 19th of April if you're in New York, or 3rd of May in London. So ballot winners will be notified by 24th of April in New York or 4th of May, so the week before.
I know.
Well, luckily I'm going to London that day, as it happens. So, you know, we'll see. Let's just hope.
I'm putting good vibes out into the universe.
Yeah.
I would like him to fix his fucking website.
He should just stop using that website, because it completely crashed when he first, when it went up around the time, and you couldn't log in. Esoteric. But, you know, in a way, I wouldn't want anything any other way.
I wouldn't have him any other way, to be honest. Like, it is kind of fun when you're like, so obviously the day the album was coming out, it was like 6 or 7 hours before, you know, it was going on sale. And I was like, right, well, I better go and see what the story is with the website, if I need to sign up or whatever. And there I am signing up, trying to find where to sign up. Cause you're the fucking curiosity rover on Mars, like trying to navigate this fucking landscape that he has. Nothing works. Just a nightmare. Like, but I honestly wouldn't have him any other way. Like,
yeah,
I think I feel about Joypal the way like Frank Ocean stands feel about Frank, where they're like, ah, it's fine. You know, we were lucky to even get him. I'm like, I don't feel that way as much about Frank, but with Jai, I'm like, I'll leave him alone. he's a good kid.
Yeah. So that was nice. You were saying, you put in the chat there that not only was at Coachella was Jai joined by his brother AK on guitar and Fabiana Palladino, but also Rocco Palladino on bass.
Yeah.
So two family members matched. And that's, you said it's Pino Palladino's son and daughter. So yeah. Who's a Welsh musician, songwriter and producer, played bass for acts like The Who, D'Angelo. Yeah. Gary Newman. Yeah. Nine Inch Nails, so yeah. Good pedigree, good stuff.
Harry spotted that when we were watching the stream. We were both watching it fully convinced that no one was live for the first few songs. I was like, he's not singing live, there's no way he's singing live. But I think it was just like there was another vocal track that was on, and just, fair enough, you know, it's your first
I find the same with that. If you look at Charlie XCX videos from Coachella or anywhere else, and I've seen her live, I'm like, she does a lot of backing track stuff. A lot. And I don't even know if she sings at the time. I'm like,
yeah.
Low Charlie XCX, but still, I'm like.
I feel like with someone like Charlie, like she's doing flips and kind of like bouncing about the place. That's fair enough. But like, if you're just standing there, like maybe singing's fine. And he sounded great when he was, like when he 100% was singing. I don't know. People said he was singing.
I'm just happy
maybe he's just that good. And I thought it was the track. You know, I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, he's been practicing. Unlike Frank Ocean, he's been practicing. He's been so practicing. That's good. Yeah. So, well, thank you for indulging us both and allowing me to
thank
indulge
you,
yourself with Jai Paul and everyone else listening as well.
Always.
Yeah. Let's leave it there because I've got to go for dinner. And that's
okay.
Fun.
Patreon?
Patreon.com/909. The Discord is where is how you get it. How you get into Discord is through Patreon. And it's a lovely community, as I've said before. Don't take my word for it. Come and have a look yourself.
Yeah.
It is a lovely place to be. And plenty of chat there about Jai Paul and Frank Ocean and everyone else and ice rinks and God knows what else. Bands and people that are playing and music leagues and all sorts of stuff. I think it's a best of the month possibly next week we might be doing. So
yeah, that feels right.
We'll be a few days early maybe, but...
yeah, that's okay. Yeah, that feels maybe. Correct. All right.
But yeah, good.
Enjoy your dinner now.
Okay. You too. Whatever you end up eating.
You're going for dinner, so...
yeah, well, you can still enjoy your dinner.
Okay. I will.
All right.
Okay, Andrea, bye everyone.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye. They said it's curfew. We gotta go.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.